Welcome back. I'm Paula Gordon. Elizabeth Strout has joined me. Thank you so much for that.
It's great to be here.
Daniel Levitin has written about in fact, he has a wonderful book called The Brain on Music. And he talks about the physicality of these experiences. And in a very real sense, it seems to me, whether you're talking about instrumental music or singing or the baby listening to mama's heartbeat, whether you're talking about listening to how poetry works in the brain or the cello or that sentence, is all the same part of the importance of the aesthetic, isn't it?
Yes, it is. It absolutely is. I mean, when you say cello, is there anything as gorgeous as a cello?
The answer is no.
I don't think so. For me, boy. And how can one tell a story that has that sense of dignity? Is that an old-fashioned word? Maybe it is.
So what's wrong with old-fashioned?
What's wrong with trying to bring some sense of resonance and dignity and deep sound to what our stories are?
We have the great good fortune to have a beloved best friend in Janos Starker, who is the world's preeminent cellist. He's sort of the dean of cellists. And he both teaches it as well as just being an awesome performer. So he practices what he preaches. And so many, many years ago when I first met him, I said, can you take what you do and put it into words? He said, well, of course not, and now I'll try. And his condensation, if you will, of what makes it great is balance, purity, and simplicity. Mm-hmm. Balance, purity, simplicity. Mm-hmm. And then 30 years later, I asked him again. He said, yeah, balance, purity, simplicity. And now I add one more, and that is discipline.
Yeah.
And it would seem to me that discipline, in addition to balance, purity, and simplicity, is a lot of what your writing is about.
I like that, the balance, simplicity, and purity, because I think that it's essential for a writer to make sure when we talk about, you know, Hemingway's thing of like write the truest sentence, you know, what does that mean? It means a lot of things, but one of the things it means is don't show off. Mm-hmm. Don't you know, be pure, be simple, be direct, be as pure and simple as a child. And the business of showing off or, you know, doing some pyrotechnics here or there or look what I can do, and you know, that's to me, that takes away from...
Well, and it doesn't endure, thank you for
that. No, I don't think so. I think you're exactly right.
Again, as a real guide in thinking about these things, Starker has said, I was complaining to him once about modern music, which I also can complain about some of modern poetry, the stuff that came between the 60s and the 90s, if you will. And I said, it's just ugly to me. I don't like it. It isn't pretty.
Right.
And he
right.
said, don't worry about it. In the end, the great stuff endures.
Right.
Well,
right.
I think it's part of
true.
Why I worry about the dreck of which you speak in writing is, I hope so,
yeah.
But what if it gets drowned out?
Well, that's the worry, is that is there so much foolishness and foolishness, that's what I think of it as, is there so much of it, and is it are we so becoming so accustomed to it that it just will, it's, you know, like a dust that's settling over the truer things that one would have hoped a number of years ago would endure. I don't know. There's no way of knowing. But one hopes that there's something in us that continues to reach for the pure and the simple and the honest.
I think a lot about politics, and it would be easy for me to say, oh, well, that's not what this is about. But everything that you're writing about is political in the deepest sense, isn't
absolutely.
It?
Well, isn't it Virginia Woolf who said the personal is political?
Yeah.
I think. I'm not sure.
And vice versa. Well, yeah. It would have been appropriate.
I heard it. You know, I've heard it attributed to other people, but I think that she said so.
It is regularly said that it is our artists who show us what's over the horizon.
Yes.
And it would seem to me that some of what you're saying in these wonderful books is that we have dissed the common person in ways that are simply inappropriate, and especially
right.
if one cares about democracy.
Right.
That
right.
these are the people who who we need to be hearing from, who haven't lost track of what's important, who are not going to stab you in the back, except for those who will, and then what are we going to do about that?
Right, right.
And it seems to me that much of what you say can then be taken to the next place. And if one is writing or reading Drek, it doesn't do that for us.
No, it doesn't do that. It doesn't do that.
Is there a political...
It's sort of topical and it will, you know, move away.
Is there a core... Forgive my asking, political vision in this of who and what we might be?
I think there has to be. I mean, look at, let's start with Amy and Isabel, which takes place, I purposely wasn't specific because I wanted a sort of an impressionistic kind of feeling for that. And with Abide With Me, I got very, very specific in 1959. But there's Amy and Isabel, you know, a single mother raising a daughter, and she was ashamed of the fact that she had that child out of wedlock. Now that's not our world anymore. So that was the record of something that was about to no longer become.
And a lot of people just don't remember that. That was just,
they don't even remember
unacceptable.
That. But it was absolutely the way it was in that time and
some
place.
People did give their babies away, and some people kept
that's
them.
That's right, and that's right, and that's sort of that's the story of us that. That'd be a different story in 2008. And Abide With Me specifically in 1959, yeah, you know, a whole different kind of ministry, which I just not even going to get into that right now.
About I'll bet you've had quite a ride with that.
Oh, dear Lord. But,
as it were.
You know, so and then here's Olive, you know, going to visit her son who's accepting a certain kind of life in New York, and will the subway blow up, and what does this mean to Olive? And she's, you know, got to walk through security with her shoes off, and her vulnerability, and the parrot that's shrieking, praise God. You know, so yeah, this is some record, I hope and believe, of who we are, and what's emerging, and where we're going, and how fearful we are.
And if we don't examine it, it owns
absolutely.
Us.
Absolutely, of course. Absolutely.
I had a sense with Olive that you wanted her to liberate herself, that she had so much potential.
Yes.
And that her own constraints in her own powerfulness and in her own weakness were, I don't know if you remember the TV series called The Stranger, but it was in the 60s, early 70s, 14 episodes long, came out of England. Absolutely brilliant. It, I think, became a cult thing. But in the course of these 14 episodes, I don't remember the actor's name. He was the actor and the producer. But look it up, The Stranger.
I will. I'm not familiar.
And in these 14 episodes, the shtick is that this guy has become captured. And it turns out they filmed it in Port Marion in Wales. And it's elaborate and it's fanciful and it looks like science fiction. And in the end, that which has captured him is his own sense of self. And you go through, I mean, it's a masterful series. But inevitably, with all of these characters, don't we come back to our worst prison keeper?
Yes.
Ourselves.
Which is why, you know, I think I'm so drawn to that image of Cheevers, you know, with the prisoner, the naked prisoner, and the, you know, the vulnerability of that prisoner. And yes, Olive is certainly a prisoner. She is a prisoner of herself. And she's also a prisoner of time and place. She's a very intelligent woman. And where, you know, does she have a venue for that kind of ferocious energy? Not exactly. And yet her own bafflement at what to do with all that energy. And
which makes her quite heroic.
Yes. Yes. I think so. I think so.
Joseph Campbell tells us that the hero is he or she. I will update him. He or she who goes out and has an adventure and then comes back and tells the community about the adventure. So without coming back, you're not heroic. You're
right.
Just you're reckless.
Right. You're just gone. That's it.
So what's the difference between reckless and heroic? Well, isn't that some of what you capture in thinking about these characters?
Yes, I hope so. That's certainly what I'm hoping to do. Yes. Yes.
So you read all the time, and you hang out with poets, and you live in a place that is very stimulating. Can one get that kind of stimulation? Because there are still a lot of folks who are in either intellectual or social ghettos, and I think of the suburbs comes to mind first and foremost.
Yeah.
You don't have to be in a poor place in a city to be in a ghetto. You may very well be in a rich suburb.
Right. God
everything
knows.
And you could be in church, speaking of God knows. I mean, there are all kinds of ways to create these prisons.
Mm-hmm.
Is this part of the agenda, is to say, you don't have to be there, you can, it's not easy.
Yeah, you could be anywhere and be in your own prison, absolutely. And as far as, I don't know if this is directly connected to that, but as far as like living in New York and writing in New York, the fact of the matter is some people say, well, how can you live there and write? You know, the fact of the matter is I have a very quiet life in New York. I'm not really running around that much doing literary things. I'm very interested in the Center for Constitutional Rights. I'm interested in Amnesty International. I'm interested in volunteering at Sloan Kettering Memorial Hospital. So the things that I do outside my writing life really don't have an awful lot to do with writing. So I have a very kind of, in some ways, a very private writing life. It's still very furtive. It's a solitary thing.
Well, people think New York is big and noisy. New York is a bunch of little villages.
Exactly.
And you can do with it what you will.
You can do with it what you will. And I'm just happy to have people walking around and seeing darling girls on the subway that then can show up in a story.
And we're glad that you do that too.
Fake fur denim jacket.
We'll have a few more minutes with Elizabeth Strout when we return. Be with us.